Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. I'd like to welcome my guest, Rebecca Fraser, who graduated from Yale University in film studies, focusing on screenwriting. She is a writer and editor for altruistic organizations, as well as a yoga instructor and vegan mom. Thank you, Rebecca, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'd like to ask about your professional career.
Sure. You know, I have been published in magazines and other outlets throughout North America. I've edited a business leadership book and edited a business magazine. My training is in screenwriting. I've written several feature film scripts, not any that you would have seen because they didn't sell, but I did write them. I've really, in my 15-year career as a writer, I've covered a huge range of topics, from environmental issues to celebrity interviews to social issues like domestic violence and the effects of landmines in regions throughout the world. Over the years, have found the most fulfillment writing for audiences who really care about making a positive impact in their community and in the wider world.
In relation to the climate change, what words do you have on that?
I have two really, you know, two messages regarding climate change. One is, I think most of us need to become better informed. I myself am just beginning to understand this problem. I thought I understood it, but I have been watching a web interview series and I'm just realizing how little I knew. So there are a lot of wonderful resources out there, and actually if you go to my Twitter feed, which is at Rebecca L. Fraser, I have a list of environmentalists and a list of altruists, and you'll find a number of great resources for information on both of those lists, because really it's important to understand what's happening. It's not something that we can ignore and hope will go away, because it's not going away. It right now is getting worse, but we do have an opportunity to turn things around if we are willing to take action. And so here, this leads to my second message, and that is that anybody can make a difference.
As an opportunity to be informed, the documentary Cowspiracy is being hosted by Tip Top Country Store in Brookfield, and it's going to be screened in Sturbridge, Mass. On February 24th, Tuesday at 6:30.
Yeah, and I haven't seen that yet. I've heard great things about it. I don't know if I'll be able to make that screening, but it's definitely on my agenda to watch the film. I understand the message is about how our eating choices really affect the environment, and it makes me feel good to be a vegan, knowing that, you know, the food that I'm eating is releasing less carbon into the atmosphere.
Yes, and the documentary is great, Cowspiracy, and for this particular screening, a portion of the proceeds is going to be donated to WCUW Community Radio. So that's a extra benefit.
That's awesome. Have you seen it yet?
Yes, I saw it once. It played in Millbury in October 2014, and I'm looking forward to seeing it again. On your writings on landmines, what's happening?
It's a wonderful organization called the International Committee to Ban Landmines. And they've been working very hard for well over a decade to get all nations in the world to agree to stop using landmines in conflict. Countries in the world have agreed to not use landmines, and that is so important. You know, the native peoples in Central and South America consider landmines to be a rape of the land, a rape of the earth. And when you think about it, there are still landmines, Marlene, that are active from World War II in Albania and other areas needless to say, there are landmines throughout Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, all from the Vietnam War, which started in the late 1940s and raged until 1975. It's life-threatening and life-destroying. I have interviewed personally, you know, face-to-face, people whose lives were devastated by landmines. I traveled to Nicaragua for a client, and it's a really wonderful trip. I met wonderful people without arms, you know, without legs, who had the misfortune to be picking coffee on their farm, not realizing that a recent bout of rain had washed landmines from one position on a hill to a different position, which happened to be the place where they stood, and got blown up. It's impossible to really get, like, what that this is still happening all over the world. It's really tragic and completely unnecessary. And one organization that sent me to Nicaragua, the Polis Center for Social and Economic Development, is based right here in central Massachusetts. And they do amazing work all over the world with victims of landmines. And a lot of the work that they do is helping to set up infrastructure for people who now need wheelchairs, because many countries they're not set up the way that we are in the U.S. There aren't wheelchair accessible ramps to even get up on a sidewalk, never mind to get into a store or a cafe. You know, there's a big stigma attached with injury and illness in many countries still, even today. So they're doing really phenomenal work to help people and maybe to be involved with the great work that the Polis Center is doing, and to meet people around the world who are working to make a positive difference and get rid of this horrible environmental and human blight.
Rebecca, I honor you for your work and your compassion. Key words you had said, that it's tragic and unnecessary. And in relation to landmines, that they're life-threatening and destroying, I'd like to share this information about a book called The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony, written by Dr. Will Tuttle. The philosophy is that the root of all the injustice and violence with wars and militaries and all forms of violence, the root of it is based in humanity's practice of killing and eating animals and enslaving female animals for their lactation secretions and ovulatory secretions, which are dairy and eggs, and that these energies, these vibrations, on a massive scale, worldwide, every day, don't just go away. They boomerang back, and it just creates more violent energies worldwide. And so the work of all human justice and peace movements and women's movements, feminist movements, without incorporating veganism into it, it continues on this vicious cycle century after century. And so it really requires a dedication to veganism to finally reach a solution so that no one has to suffer. And I think of all the suffering that you have just mentioned of the children and the women and the men, and it is tragic, and we hope it will stop. The basic premise is from Henry David Thoreau, a quote by one of his quotes. There are thousands who are hacking at the branches to every one who is striking at the roots. And so at Vegan Nation, we really want to help spread this message of veganism. And it's not just about animals, even though that's tragic and life-threatening and destroying in itself. But it also relates to all aspects of human societies. And when you mentioned rape of the land, I think that's really appropriate term to use. And I think we know that in our patriarchal carnist worldwide culture that's been going on since 10,000 years ago, that it's also the domination over and the rape of feminine bodies, and also the earth too, seeing the earth as Mother Earth. And so also within the feminist movement, there is a group who's doing a lot of work to stop violence against women called 1 Billion Rising, started by Eve Ansler. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with the organization, but she wrote the Vagina Monologues.
Yes, and that's playing February 14th worldwide, and a lot of colleges, and here in Worcester, Clark University is putting on the Vagina Monologues on the 13th and the 14th of this month. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to going to it. I went to it 20 years ago at Worcester State College, and it was a great play. And so it's important. That's important work. Yet without women acknowledging that if we say we don't want to experience the oppression and violence and abuse and domination, then we need to start participating in those actions towards others who also have a nervous system and pain receptors, families and failings, whose interests are as important to them as ours are to us, and to not use it as an excuse saying, well, this is just animals. Well, that's what was said about every oppressed group. And right. So we need to honor that. So that's why I'm thrilled that you are a vegan, because of you being in this powerful position to be working with all the organizations who are working to make this world a better world, whether it's to do with the environment or social justice issues. I really think that your influence is important on the essence of veganism.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and you know, I think it's interesting that you make the connection and that this author makes the connection between, you know, diet and peace. But it really is true. I mean, people fight over resources. We've seen with the Gulf Wars, it's been about oil. As we grow more aware as a society, you know, I like to think that we can stop this. I have found that finding a new way into peace it was not my intention in going vegan. I was one of those people who thought, you know, well, geez, why else are the cows there except for me to milk and eat? But I was turned on to the China Study, which I'm sure you've probably read, by T. Colin Campbell.
Yeah, it's a great book.
And I've been a health fanatic for decades, and reading that book, it just turned me around completely. I just thought, well, regardless of whatever reason I see for the purpose of these beings, it clearly is not in my best interest to eat them or their products. It's very deleterious to my body, and I don't want to do that, and I don't want to give these foods to my child any longer. And so I made a switch in 2007, and a really nice side benefit, especially initially, was much greater sense of inner peace. I had started meditating around that time as well, so it was probably a combination of things. But over time, my outlook has shifted as well, and I've come to, I don't know, become more compassionate towards animals, and which I really wasn't before. And, you know, I had pets and things, but I just had a different sense about my relationship with animals.
We're talking with Rebecca Fraser, a regional writer who is living the vegan lifestyle. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots, global, unembedded, independent, international investigative news hour. You're listening to WCUW Worcester 91.3 FM, community radio serving central Massachusetts, online at wcuw.org.
Navarone Reggae Sound System with DJ Bob Bob Boom every Friday 9 to 11 p.m. on WCUW 91.3 FM in Worcester. Old reggae, new reggae, all styles, all across the world. Navarone Reggae. You never know what you're gonna hear. The selections are crazy. Navarone Reggae Sound System, WCUW.
Hi there, this is Andrew Tanacha inviting you to our Saturday morning program, The Albanian Hour, from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Come and join us and have a great start to your Saturday.
Welcome back to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Mylene Narrow. My guest today, Rebecca Fraser, is sharing with us her information about her experiences in transitioning to a vegan diet, her interview with Alicia Silverstone, and her experiences in animal agriculture as a teenager.
It's a nice benefit, I think. And it's funny, I interviewed Alicia Silverstone, the movie actress, when she came out with her book, The Kind Diet. And she said the same thing, you know, that she went vegan because she looked at her dog one day and said, wow, I can't eat my dog. Why am I eating other animals? That was her reason. But seeing the practices that are going on, you know, with factory farming and even in small farms. I mean, I live in a small rural community. There are a number of farms here. Many of them have animals. And I know, you know, I know these people. They care about their animals. They treat them, you know, as humanely as any farmer does, which pretty humanely, but they still got to kill them, when, you know, when it's said and done. You know, they're still separating the baby goats from the mother goats and the calves from the cows, and I don't really see how that's right. Even as a kid growing up, when I drank milk, I remember visiting a friend's dairy farm and seeing all these cows with X's on them. And I asked my friend, you know, why do the cows have these big orange X's on them? And she said, oh, well, those are the ones that are going to be separated from their mothers. And, you know, that means decaf. You take the calf away because now it's time for us to take the milk. And even, you know, even as a young teenager, I remember thinking, wow, that doesn't seem right. What does the calf get then? And, you know, the fact is, like, if the calf is getting anything other than what nature intended for it, then that's not healthy for the calf. And why do we have the right to make that choice for that animal?
Exactly. Again, it comes down to the oppression and exploitation of females' reproductive abilities.
Right. And you can look at this from any number of viewpoints. If you want to get religious about it, you can look and say, okay, well, the Bible says thou shalt not kill. There's that. And then there's, you know, if you go to Hindu scripture, then there's the concept, the yogic concept of ahimsa, meaning nonviolence. You know, there's no distinction. You know, well, it's okay to be violent against animals, but not people, or it's okay to be violent against women but not men, or, you know, there's no distinction. It's just nonviolence, non-harming. So, you know, there's many different angles and so many benefits. How can someone say they're an environmentalist and then go buy food that's been grown with pesticides? Because pesticides do so much damage. And then eat food that takes up more land and water than necessary, doesn't replenish the soil. I'm sorry, dairy farming does not replenish the land at all.
Yeah. I like a quote by Philip Wollum, the Australian philanthropist and former mm-hmm. VP of Citibank, who is a strong vegan activist. And he said that with the future being vegan, of course, as you said, it includes organic and, of course, fair trade, mm-hmm. is that it's not putting anybody out of business. It's only the product line that will change. His quote was, farmers will be making so much money they won't bother stopping to count, and he'd be the first to congratulate them.
Right. When you think about how our government has artificially propped up the dairy industry. They've also artificially propped up the corn industry and the soybean industry. Why? I mean, that's just ridiculous. Why not encourage farmers to grow a variety of foods so they don't need subsidies?
Yeah.
And so that they're actually truly feeding their neighbors, instead of, you know, well, we grow enough corn to distill into syrup and we're going to ship that 1,000 miles so that McDonald's can use it for their milkshakes, you know.
Yeah.
And we've created enough milk and dehydrated it because it's going to go bad if we don't, so we had to use the energy to do that, and now that's going to be sent somewhere 1,000 miles away for, additional processing and packaging and blah, 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 blah. It's just, it goes on and on and on.
Yes, it can be overwhelming. However, I agree with your philosophy, and it reminds me of the motto from the Institute for Humane Education, is to do the most good in the least time.
We all have the power to do that. And whether it's with our diet, which is a simple change to make, doesn't mean it's easy, but it is simple. So whether it's with our diet or with our energy choices or with the kind of bag we take out of the grocery store, you know, we all have that power. And also with just our mindset. Everything starts with our mindset. We can experiment with becoming more peaceful simply by breathing deeply, simply by taking a moment before reacting and inhaling for 5 seconds, and then taking 5 full seconds to exhale, and then choosing a response instead of automatically going to the default anger or fear or whatever other negative emotions.
And I like what you're saying about the vibrations and the positive vibrations. And with a vegan diet, it's eating positive vibrations and it's eating peace and harmony. Think of a orchard or a garden, organic, and the nourishment that gives, instead of eating fear. When we eat animal products, including the dairy and the eggs, as well as the flesh of animals, we're eating the fear, the anxiety, the trauma, the pain, the confusion that these animals
are
in.
I mean, on a chemical level, it's adrenaline that we're eating. And adrenaline is the substance that is created in mammals, not just humans. It's in cows and pigs when they're slaughtered. And it's also created in humans. It's part of that fight or flight response.
Yeah.
Which is part of the autonomic nervous system. We get enough of that, you know, in our own bodies. We don't need to add to it by consuming it in our diet. And yeah, when you choose foods with a higher vibration, especially if they're raw, I mean, that's even like, that's a double whammy. Of course, on a day like today, when I think we have 3 feet of snow in our yard, you know, maybe you want something cooked, but it can still be a cooked vegetable that's really nourishing. And you're just flooding your cells with great stuff. And, you know, another thing that I think is really a wonderful choice that people can make in their own lives, totally empowering, totally good for the environment, is growing vegetables in pots. Just get a big pot at anywhere, Target, Ocean State Job Lot, has them really inexpensively. And just get a big pot, get some organic soil and some organic seeds or plant starts. We ate arugula salad that I grew in a pot all summer long. I planted the seeds once and then just clipped off the leaves we wanted, you know, every so often, clipped them with scissors, and then it would grow right back. I never even had to replant.
Yeah. Oh, that's great to hear. And up in your neck of the woods, you're in Petersham, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is a new vegan publishing company. And it's Vegan Publishers is the name of it. And they just came out with a book called Circles of Compassion, The Intersectionality of the Issues of Justice Issues. So
that's
a lot going on in Massachusetts. What contacts would you like to leave for our listeners?
Well, definitely follow me on Twitter. It's at Rebecca L. Fraser, REBEKAHLFRASER. And you can reach me that way. You can also check out my website, RebeccaLFraser.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn. Yeah, I'd love to hear from other people who are interested and working to make a positive difference in the world, no matter how that comes about, whether you're working with the homeless or simply changing your diet or in publishing or in business. I'm so inspired by the benefit corporations. There's no reason that we can't do good and make money at the same time. I work with a lot of homeless people as a volunteer, and I've got to tell you, if anything, it makes me believe even more that the opportunity to do well financially is a great opportunity. And when we can do that, we should, as long as we follow that principle of ahimsa, do no harm, And so the benefit corporations are really all about that. Whatever your thing is, whether you're a philanthropist or a nonprofit person or just an individual who, you know, has an altruistic idea you want to spin around, I'd love to hear from you. I'm always looking to grow my tribe of fellow altruists.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Rebecca.
Thank you so much, Marlene, for having me on the show and for this work that you're doing. I think it's really important for our community and for your audience. You're doing a really great service here, and I appreciate that. So thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you on Vegan Nation. Thanks for sharing your time with us. Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/vegannation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow, wishing you a good day.
We had a meeting, and due to the growing controversial subject matter, we have some concerns and have to pull out.
You're going up against people that have massive legal resources. And you have nothing.
A lot of people just keep their mouths shut because they don't want to be the next one with the bullet to their head.
Cowspiracy, the sustainability secret.
I don't know that I would want to comment on that.
Being screened at the Sturbridge Cinematic Theater Tuesday, February 24th at 6:30 p.m. A portion of proceeds to benefit WCUW. Advance ticket info 508-344-1107. Join us for a special meeting of the WCUW membership to be held in the front room of WCUW on Tuesday, February 10th, beginning at 7 p.m. A vote will take place to change the annual meeting date of WCUW from October to the third week of May. A complete review of the bylaws governing WCUW will take place at this special meeting. That's February 10th, Tuesday, in the front room of WCUW, beginning at 7 p.m.
Namaskar. Greetings. This is Mohan, host of the Indian music program Saptaswar. Join me, Raju, or Sagar every Sunday night from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Listen and enjoy an hour of Hindustani and Carnatic style of Indian classical music, followed by an hour of contemporary music from Indian movies, Bollywood, and other Indian languages. Saptaswar, Sundays at 6 p.m. at 91.3 FM WCUW and streaming live at wcuw.org.
Welcome to Things of Interest, a program about our local world. Our guest today is Paul Kassebaum, a physics PhD student at WPI. His research is on the theoretical aspects of sound lasers. He will describe for us how the human ear perceives sound, in particular, music.
Think about the size of your ear drum, or your cochlea. It's a pretty small organ. Also, think about the string on a double bass, you know, a really long string or a piano string. Well, it turns out that your cochlea can't actually physically resonate in such a low frequency as you would be pumping out through those strings. Instead, what your ear is picking up on are what are called the higher harmonics of those sounds. So by higher harmonics, I mean when you're playing a low note like 60 hertz from a piano versus a 60 hertz tone from a double bass, those sounds from those two instruments come along with a mixture of higher frequencies that are multiples of the lower frequency. And it's those higher frequencies that come along for the ride that allow you to distinguish between those two instruments, even if they're playing the same note. You can tell, oh, that's a double bass playing that note, piano or a bass singer. I can tell the difference between those, but they're all playing the same fundamental 60 hertz. And what's interesting, what was discovered by AT&T in the early 1900s, was that if you, using a computer, if you take away those fundamental lower tones, the bass, the real tone, the 60 hertz, let's say, and all you leave are those higher harmonics, the higher frequency tones, and you have a person listen to it, the person will perceive that lower frequency tone, even though it's not physically there. You took it out. Your brain will still think it's there.
Our thanks to Paul for coming in to speak with us, and to you for listening to Things of Interest, produced by Barbara Roberts and Christina Smith. Music by Donald Prang.
WCUW would like to invite you to the Front Room Concert Series 2015. On the third Thursday of each month, you will hear some